Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Hi, friends. Welcome to another episode of That Sounds Fun. I'm your host, Annie F. Downs. So happy to be here with you today. The music in the background is from our good friend, Mr. Ryan O'Neill, also known as Sleeping at Last. He has a song for every Enneagram type, and this one is the 7 song because your girl Annie is a 7, but you need to go and listen to all of them. Check out all of his music. I think you're really going to love it. Today on the show, it's a repeat offender, a repeat guest, our friend Lisa Jo Baker. She has an episode back when we were just getting this little puppy started, episode number 32. And today she is back talking about her new book, The Middle Matters. I am so excited for you to hear this conversation, hear all about what is going on with Lisa Jo. And we got to be in the same room, which is so special. So here is my conversation with my friend, Lisa Jo Baker. Friend.
Hey, I can't believe I'm here in person in your studio.
I know. Your last episode, which I think we said was episode 32, so way back in the beginning, we were not in person.
I was remote, yes. And I remember you tricked me then because you just started recording and I didn't realize that's how you do it. So this time I'm ready.
You're ready. And this time it's a little more obvious when I push the button. So it makes it a little more clear to you. We're going. This is it.
It's so fun to be here. I feel like I'm in like Santa's workshop. Like this is where the magic happens. I'm here in person watching you.
It is so fun, right?
In your element with your elves.
What's your setup look like where y'all do your show?
We are at, my friend Christy and I have a podcast called Out of the Ordinary and it's at her farmhouse in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and it's their third floor. They had this little attic room.
Yeah.
So it's perfect because it's low ceilings, a tiny room, but it has windows looking out on their gorgeous, like, driveway of maple trees. It's very, very pretty. But usually it's not like this, like a formal office environment. We're just in our PJs most of the time.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, with cups of tea.
Oh. and do you drive there?
Do you
get to Pennsylvania from?
Yeah. I'm on the Maryland side now of DC.
Got it.
And it's about an hour and a half. So it's actually quite nice. It's kind of a decompression drive.
Yeah.
Stepping out of like work mode and mommy mode and wife mode. And I play music or listen to podcasts or just enjoy total silence.
Yeah.
While driving to Christy's house.
Yes.
And then we record together. It's so fun.
How many shows do y'all do at a time?
We do. We try and batch them. So we probably will try and do sometimes 8 or 9. I'm there for like 3 days.
Oh my gosh.
And it's just a bunch of conversations. And it's funny because she and I, though, for years, so we've been friends for 20 years.
Yeah.
And anytime we would get together, this is, okay, here's my dork factor.
Yeah, no,
ready?
I'm in.
Are you ready for this? I would make lists of things I wanted to talk to her about so I wouldn't forget.
100%.
Like really important. I'm like, oh, must remember to talk about this book or that movie or what new song I heard. I don't know. This recipe. Because I'd be panicked that I wouldn't have enough time with her. And so the podcast is sort of a natural extension
of
that.
Right, it works
that.
Anyway,
here are all the conversations we have to have anyway. Might as well record them.
Yeah.
So I kid you not, look, in front of me right now is my phone with my list of Annie things that I don't want to forget to talk about.
Oh, well done.
I kid you not. I was like, oh my gosh, I have time with Annie. I have to remember to talk to her about
this. Is this public things we're talking about?
Yeah, public and private. But yes, sure. I mean, like the most important thing, this is such serious business right here. Like point number one on my notes app says eye makeup.
Oh,
I kid you not.
Let's talk about it.
I was like, I got to talk to Annie about this in person. Because anybody who listens and follows you on Instagram, I know, is thinking, how does she get her eye makeup to look that great?
Yep.
And so being the friend that she is, texted me a picture of the palette that she uses.
That I buy at the grocery store.
Yes. But then I was like, but how do you apply it so perfectly? Because what I can't get over is the charcoal that you have in the corner of your eye. Mm-hmm. And then you said, I just follow the instructions on the palette.
I literally turned it over and sent you a picture of the picture on the back. That is all I know to do, Lisa Jo.
Right.
I just can't watch YouTube. This is like
old
school YouTube. Now the kids these days watch all the makeup videos.
I know.
I just literally turned the palette over from CoverGirl that I bought at Kroger and I do whatever it says.
It's like
back.
Step one, step two, step three. 100%. And if you want four steps, it's like this.
That's 100%
what I do.
What's
sad is I couldn't read it. Like, it was so small. So I had to take photograph and enlarge it.
Yes, yes,
I was like, oh, I'm older now.
Yes.
And I tried to follow the steps, but this is where I'm still uncertain because mostly it just looked like I had a black eye. Like, something I'm doing is wrong.
Okay. It may be how you're blending.
It might be
Too much darkness. Yes.
Yes.
So
let's, like, I'm looking at your eyes right now and they're very lovely.
We'll walk through this. So the very lightest one you do inside your eyes and next to your eyebrow.
Yes.
I only do three colors.
You do the three. So that's what I'm going to ask you too, because there's a two option, a three option, and a four.
I'm a two. I'm a three girl.
You're three girl.
So the lightest one you do inside your eyes and near your eyebrows on the underside.
Right.
Kind of in the arc.
Yes.
Arc. It doesn't matter. Of your eyebrow. The second lighter shade, or the next darker one, whichever the second level is you decide to do, you kind of do across your whole eyelid.
Yes. Okay.
And then the final one, you don't scrub it hard on the dark.
Just lightly.
Kinda, yeah. And then you just draw a little triangle on
the
outside.
Okay. I'm looking
edge.
At your eyelid right now. And it's very helpful. Now, you have quite wide eyelids. I wonder if that helps too.
I do have a lot of eyelids.
You have a lot of canvas.
I got a lot
to
work with. That's exactly right.
And I was like, I feel like my eyelids are not a sufficient enough canvas.
No way. You can totally do it. Maybe try the two one. Have you backed up and tried the two one?
I will. I'll try that.
So then the blending also is very, you don't go from the outside in to blend because that will spread it across your whole eye.
Okay.
That's what makes your whole eye.
You don't
look
go
like
from the outside.
Eye.
You start at the halfway point of your eye and go
and
out
just,
to the triangle.
Actually, all I'm doing is touching between the light and the dark and blending the actual area where the light and the dark touch. That's the only thing I'm blending. I'm not taking the dark out. I'm not bringing the dark in. I'm letting the dark stay where it is.
Well, you see, these are the important conversations
and this
I
is
was
why
looking
you
forward
need,
to having
I know,
with you.
This is why we need each other on Instagram is because you literally text me right afterwards. I posted something. You said, your eyes, tell me how. And I was like, when I get home tonight, I'm just going to send you a palette of my makeup. I know.
And I was expecting some really expensive brand name and it made me feel so
not this
good.
Girl. I know.
But it was just like
we're
CVS,
just gonna do, yes,
Walgreens.
100%.
Instructions on the back.
Instructions on the back.
Know,
that is
what
the
I
trick.
Love about you. I mean, I've loved that about that, you since your very first book, Perfectly Unique, right?
Oh, thanks, yeah.
Which was actually, wasn't it called something else before?
It was called From Head to Foot when
there
I self-published
you go.
It. But now, yeah, now it's
that
perfectly
is literally,
everywhere.
I date
that's
my
how long
love
we've been friends.
All the way back to that
I believe
book.
It because we were already both at Encourage back then, right?
We were. And I remember that book so much. I remember you being so passionate about having to tell the stories in that book that you self-published it and said, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And you went all in. And I fell in love with you and that book because you were so honest about, just as a woman, and really then as a woman who's processing how she felt as a girl about her own body. Mm-hmm. And for me, having lost my mom really early, and she was really sick for a long time, so she was really gone from the time I was 16. So from 16 to 18, she was in the hospital. And she passed away a week to the day after my 18th birthday. So this whole idea of like, how do I understand things like makeup or hair or who I am as a woman is a conversation I think even in my 40s, I'm still curious about because I think there's that hole that we have sometimes.
But you're raising a daughter.
And I'm raising a daughter. So that's why it has felt for me especially important to navigate this world of figuring out how do I see myself. And I think I've always appreciated because you're so honest in your own journey there as a girl and now as a woman.
Yeah.
And for me, that's really comforting. And I think, you know, the story you told, do you know which one I'm going to mention from that
the,
book?
The duct tape.
Dude,
yeah,
I mean, I
my
know,
parents hate that story. Understandably,
I'm sure they do. I mean, you wrote about how you duct taped your middle. And so I have, it's funny how, well, I don't know if this is true for you, but for me, I can date some of my body image stuff from specific stories in my life. So for I imagine for you, it might be that duct tape one.
Yes.
But I had a similar story, and this is why I see I'm still asking questions about makeup as a 40-year-old woman. So my mom and I, before she was sick, we were driving in the car. I remember it so vividly. We're driving a green Volkswagen.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Station wagon.
Yeah.
And I'm in the front seat next to my mom, and I must have been like, I don't know, maybe 14, 13 or 14.
Was she already sick?
She wasn't.
Okay.
And that's why that's how I know how old I was. Maybe 15. And it's the season of beauty pageants. We're in South Africa.
Uh-huh.
Miss South Africa is happening on TV.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh my gosh. You're from the South. Like, you know what a big deal that
everybody
sort of thing.
Knows.
Beauty pageants, right?
Right.
And my little 14-year-old heart is so excited at these girls who are getting all dressed up. And I say to my mom, one day, Mom, I'm going to be Miss South Africa.
Mm.
To which my mother responds, I don't know what she was thinking. I wish I could ask her. She says, oh, no, you know, my darling, I think you're beautiful, but just not like that.
Oh, wow.
Ooh. And it's funny. I feel the weight of it still as a 44-year-old woman. Yeah. Like that, when you speak that into someone's life, so I don't know if it's like how your duct tape speaks to you, like those words, I feel like I've carried them ever since.
Yeah. And what do you do as a mom? Because Zoe says to you, she wants to be Miss America.
Right.
Is the right answer okay? Because then there are those moms. Zoe's beautiful. So, so end of story, brand new story.
Yeah, there you go.
There are those moms whose kids get on American Idol.
Right, right.
And you go like, why didn't anybody tell that child the truth?
Right, right.
Do you want to be the mom who says what the kid wants to hear?
Right.
But you are beautiful. I hope this is coming across right.
No, no, no. It's
you're beautiful.
Great
Tell me as a mom what you do.
Yes. So here's the thing. Like by the time they're at American Idol, they've probably gone through like years of singing at home.
Yeah. And
so like you know, you're fast forwarding, right? So it's not like at that point when I was sitting in the car with my mom, it's not like I've entered a ton of beauty pageants. I'm just a little girl having that thought for
there
the very
you go,
first time.
Yeah.
So it's not like someone who said to their mom, I want to sing. And then the mom's like, well, let's try some singing lessons. And then
There's some steps.
You're terrible at it.
You're
and
brilliant.
Then she keeps telling you, keep going, and then you get to American Idol, and then they tell you you're bad.
Brilliant.
No, this is the very beginning. This is the whisper of every woman's heart. Am I beautiful?
Yes.
Am I?
And her right answer should have been yes.
Yes, you are gorgeous.
How do we start?
Yes, let's think about like all the ways you're beautiful. So I actually have this conversation with my daughter quite a lot.
I love it.
Because she'll say to me things like, oh, you know, when she was a toddler, toddlers have these little chubby bellies, right? That they're supposed to.
Yeah.
And she would say to me sometimes at night, if she was taking a bath, like, Mom, why is my tummy like this? Like, look at my tummy. And then we would talk about how, okay, but think about acorns. Chubby, round little acorns. And they're that size because they're intended to pack up everything you need to grow into this tall, giant oak tree.
Yeah.
Well, your belly's like that. Like right now, you've got everything in you for who you're going to become. And so we talk about beauty on many, many
That's
levels,
brilliant.
Like beauty being strength, beauty being kindness, beauty being intelligence, beauty being encouragement of friends, but beauty also being beauty.
Like, yeah.
And I don't think there's any little girl in the world who isn't beautiful. And our daughters will see themselves as beautiful first through their mother's eyes is what I learned. It's the first reflection we have.
Wow.
Am I beautiful or not? How does my mom see me? And so I wish I could shake my mom by the shoulders since I'm a mom now and say, what were you thinking?
Yes.
You know? And I think she meant well. She meant that whole, I don't want my daughter to have this big disappointment in the future. But guess what? I was 14. I wasn't applying to be Miss South Africa in that moment. And so
that's a brilliant piece of advice, though, to say like, just say yes, and then take the first step. You don't.
Yes.
Reality is not necessary right here.
No.
For what the world is going to judge and decide in 50 steps from now.
Because she's not actually asking, do you think I'm beautiful enough to be on Miss South Africa? The actual question that's buried underneath is, do you think I'm beautiful? That's actually the question every little girl is asking.
Yep.
And our moms are the ones who can tell us yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
And by extension, it's the answer that we're getting from God, that we're trying to understand like who I am made as. Am I beautiful? And so I find myself still asking that question in my 40s. So it's why I wrote a whole book where like my muffin top is a main
character. Oh my gosh,
character.
It's the first chapter. I couldn't believe it. The first chapter of the Middle Matters.
The first line of the book.
It's called Why the Middle of Your Muffin Top Matters.
Yes.
Yeah.
There you go. I got such pushback.
Did you?
Oh my goodness.
From your publisher.
Mm-hmm. Not everybody, but there was a deep undercurrent of, I don't even know if we can say that word. Women won't like it.
Yeah.
It's offensive. It will make women feel less than. Women won't want to read about it. And I said, no, listen to me. Whoa, step back. Yeah. Let's have a conversation. Because there's so many parts of life that feel like the muffin top.
Mm.
Like the hard parts, right? That nobody wants to talk about. Like marriage. Oh, so dreamy. You know what? 20 years in, doesn't feel quite as dreamy as it did in the middle.
Sure.
It's in the beginning. It's hard. Or parenting teenagers or failure at work or doubt that I struggle with. I think of all of these as sort of muffin tops that we have to figure out what we're going to do with. And a lot of us just want to drape a flowy shirt over them, much like I'm wearing today, and call it good enough. But I really think we miss out then. I mean, as you know, if you go to Panera, like I do,
yes,
the muffin top is the best thing. You can order it as a standalone.
Really? You can just get a muffin top
at
Panera?
Called a Muffy. Yes.
That's adorable.
Pumpkin spice Muffy.
Oh,
excellent.
Okay.
Cannot recommend it enough. But I think that there are these parts of ourselves we have been taught to feel embarrassed of that I just don't think is true. I think my body and what it has produced, the three children, the humans I grew from scratch,
yes,
are part of why I have this muffin top and this marriage that's been hard here in the middle, but I'm still in it. You know, these failures stand for the things I try to do. And so I said to my publisher, but I want to write about that. I want to write about all these parts that women feel like are not good enough and that they want to hide.
Yeah.
I'm going to go tell me some stories about them because I want women to see how beautiful they are. I want to be the mom who tells them, yes, you are beautiful.
Yeah.
You're beautiful.
Yes. You're getting to, I mean, this is just the acorn thing, right? Where you are getting to take your loss and your experience as a daughter without a mom for most of her life. And you are getting to turn around and mother so many people.
Right. And I feel so strongly about that, that as women, one of the gifts we get to give one another is say, I see the beauty in you. I see the beauty in that project, that book you're writing, or that kids you're mentoring, or how you're trying homeschool for the first time. Oh, didn't work out for you, and now you're trying school again. There are just so many ways that we get to show women how beautiful they are. So I figured, you know what? Maybe I could write a book that's a collection of photographs, is how I think about this book.
Oh, wow.
A collection of images so that, and the camera I used are my words.
Yeah.
That's how I took the pictures. And so I have an essay called My Favorite Muffin Top Photo.
Yeah.
Because it actually was a photograph. That's how it started. My daughter and I, at the end of her kindergarten play, I'm crouched down on the stage next to her. I'm just like so happy.
Yeah.
So delighted in her, just glowing. I mean, we're fools for her, okay? We have two boys and then a daughter. She's the youngest. It was her kindergarten play, our last one. Her father brought her flowers. We're just like ridiculous. Okay?
Yeah.
On the edge of the stage.
And the boys love her too.
They love her.
Everybody.
I mean, she just rules the roost. And we were like, she was like, the show she was in is called The Three Piggy Opera, which I think everybody does like across the U.S. pretty much. She had a speaking role, Annie.
Oh.
She was the brick house pig.
Oh my gosh.
She had an entire line. Okay.
Brick house pig.
You would think she had like got a scholarship to Juilliard.
Yes, yes, yes.
Basically,
she was
is
so
how
ready.
we felt about it. And she had complaints afterwards about how when she was trying to speak her line into the microphone, the boy she was sharing with didn't share and she didn't get to hold the mic whatever.
You said it's called the patriarchy. We'll talk about it. You'll get used to it.
So I'm crouched down on the stage and her dad's taking a picture. And, afterwards when I looked at the photograph, at first glance, all I saw was just joy.
Yeah.
Like that picture just radiates delight and love and fierce pride.
Yeah.
And then at the second glance, I noticed that my muffin top had put on a very prominent appearance in the picture.
Yeah.
But the reason I love the photograph is it's because I hadn't had time to be self-conscious.
Yes.
I hadn't had time to rearrange my clothes and the drape of my shirt and how I was positioned because I was so focused on Zoe.
Yeah.
And I thought, my goodness, if that isn't a metaphor for life, like let me learn to be so focused on others that I forget about myself in healthy ways.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
Because that's what that photo is about. It's not about my muffin top.
Right.
It's about that moment with my daughter.
Yes.
That I'd like to point out my muffin top made possible. But anyway.
I just had a video come out not long ago and it was in multiple parts. And one of the parts I was really insecure about how I looked. And I had to do this whole thing of like, you know why you weren't doing all the things with your body that you normally do to hide things? Is you are having a great time.
Right.
So no one is going to notice what you're noticing because they're all having a great time too.
Isn't that powerful?
It's just so ridiculous.
That's its own kind of beauty, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I was looking at your Instagram post from a while back where you had the picture of just the jeans. You had a photograph of jeans and you talked about how you cut the labels out of your clothes.
Yeah, cut all the tags out of the pants. Yeah.
That's so interesting to me. So you can't be defined by that number.
Yeah, because it just stresses.
It
either it's a blessing or a stressing. Either way, and it doesn't matter.
It's just not worth it. And I
matter.
Think I had an experience recently where, you know, I'm from South Africa originally, and we were going home for the summer. And it was my dad's 70th birthday. And my dad is a doctor, like, but the healthiest guy you've ever met. He's turning 70 and he runs 5 miles a week. And
they've
adopted 3 kids, the ages of our kids. He's like a saint in human form. And I had been on this book deadline. And so I had pounded a large quantity of candy corn and my favorite carbs, French bread and brie cheese.
Yes.
And Coke. And, you know, there's some things a 40-year-old body just does not recover from very quickly, or anybody really. And so, like, I had suddenly went on this panic, like, about what weight I was and how we hadn't seen them in 2 years, and how when you only see people every 2 or 3 years, there's all this pressure about how you look because it's how they'll remember you.
Yeah.
And it was so stressful. And I felt like every morning the scale was like this loud, shouty voice in my head waiting to just yell at me about how awful I was and what I weighed was terrible and what my family was going to think of me. And finally, I just decided that was enough already. I couldn't handle it. And I called my dad and I just told him. I was like, hey, man.
Oh, wow.
So listen, we're coming home a little heavier than planned.
Yeah.
I'm just going to need you to love us.
Yeah.
I'm giving you a heads up because I don't want to deal with like a lecture from you about it. I just want to come home. And my father, and this is, I guess, one of those full circle redemptive moments, my father said all the things my mom didn't say at that moment when I asked about being beautiful. My dad just laughed and he said to me, are you kidding me? Just get home already. We cannot wait for you to come. We're so excited and we are definitely planning on adding a few more pounds because we've got all your favorite foods lined up. Like, you just come home and let us love you. And I realized, it's interesting. On my mom's, this is a random series of dots to connect.
No, do it.
But on my mom's tombstone is a Bible verse from 2 Corinthians 4:16 that talks about how these light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal weight of glory that far outweighs them all. And I've thought about that idea of weight. Right? Like the weight of glory that all of our bodies carry. Mm. And there's no way a scale can measure that. Mm. And I felt like in listening to my dad that day, he connected those dots for me and I realized, oh, I'm weighing my life in the wrong way. Mm. I'm weighing my beauty in the wrong way. Like there's a weight of glory that God embodies inside of us that can't possibly be measured by scale. It just cannot.
Yeah.
And it was such a turning point for me to realize, oh, okay, so I get that fitness matters and health matter. I mean, I understand that, right?
Yes,
like
yes.
You, of course, you talk about it a lot. We understand that, but I can't let that weight crush me. I have to remember there's a larger weight that my body is made for, a weight of glory that a scale can't possibly capture.
Yeah.
And that has been what I mean when I talk about this time and this season in my life in the middle of leaning into these things like muffin tops that people feel like diminish us. But instead, no, I think they remind us of the life that we've lived, the weight of glory that's buried in our ordinary lives.
Yeah.
So that trip home ended up being much different than I expected because my dad said the things I kind of wish my mom had said, 20 years ago.
Right. So this is why I shared the jeans picture, Lisa Jo.
Yeah.
Is because in the first of 2 Corinthians, it said 2 Corinthians 1, I think it's verse 4 or 7. We'll tag it. But it says, in our distress, you were comforted and received salvation.
Oh.
And in our comfort, you received comfort and endurance. Hmm. And that morning that I post that picture, the Lord just kind of said to me, it is in your distress that other people get comforted and they get salvation.
Wow.
And so you can't only tell stories after you've been comforted. You have to tell stories when you're in distress.
In your distress.
So your whole book, The Middle Matters,
the
whole thing is going to bring people comfort and salvation.
Oh, that's so powerful.
Right? And then when we tell the story from a comforted place, they get endurance. They go, okay, then I can survive this too.
Wow, that's a good word, Annie.
Isn't that a great script? And you know me and Paul. Well, I don't know if you know me and Paul. We don't always get along.
Right.
But I thought that is one of the most, that will impact me for my life.
Right.
Of like, oh, if I will tell stories from a distressed place, like you've done with the Middle Matters.
Mm-hmm.
And like I can talk about where I am with my jeans in that particular day. Then people get comforted and salvation.
Wow, man, that'll preach. It's good to hear. I love that I'm here in person so that those Instagram posts I've read from a distance, I feel like have Annie dissect for me now in person.
Girl, I hit send and I left my phone in my living room and I went to my bedroom and I cried my eyes out. Uh-huh. And I said, I don't want to tell anybody any of that.
Sister.
But if people will get saved.
Right.
And if they will get comforted.
Right.
Then my life is not about, I mean, that is what,
that's the thing.
That's what you've done with your book.
And that is exactly how I feel about this book. I felt like I was going to take all those stories, all those parts of my life. So in here, I mean, I talk about failure very brutally. Yeah. I talk about how we have never owned a house till I turned 40. We rented. Like all the things that were a deep source of shame.
I know. I didn't know that was a shamey thing, but
profound. I think for women in general, women will send me like direct messages, like a secret, like a whisper into my Instagram. Me too. We've never owned a house, or we're living.
Is it a married thing? Maybe.
Maybe
we've because single women, there's always a I don't want to move again, or I don't want to buy because that says I'm giving up on getting married. Kind of feel
interesting.
So I wonder if it's a husband and wife together,
and that sense of like, oh, we're married, so we're supposed to be grown ups, and part of being grown ups,
and that's totally
anecdotal.
So if people are yelling back at us,
we
could
be
way wrong, but I'm interested in that. Yeah,
but I have, I just hear these whispers come into me, or like the sense, because it's the sense of having failed. Like we had to move back in with our parents, or we made really bad financial choices, so we can't afford to own a house. And so Pete and I had been married 15 years before we owned a house. We had always rented and we had made really bad financial choices.
Yeah.
And I talk about that in the book too, because for a long time, gosh, I love what you said. I'm going to hold on to how you describe that. So when we share stories that are coming out of our, what was the word you
distress.
Used? Distress. Stories
people
from distress.
Comforted,
people get comforted.
Salvation.
And I think the enemy so clearly wants to prevent us from telling those stories so that people won't get comfort, right? So Pete and I, part of why we couldn't buy a house is we were foolish with our finances, really foolish. And we lived overseas a lot. We've moved a lot. We've had babies in every country we've lived. Some people collect fridge magnets.
Yeah.
We've had children.
Yeah, that's right.
But those babies cost us a lot because we didn't have insurance. We were traveling.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was on a payment plan to pay off my first two boys for years.
Yeah.
I told them they were like so expensive.
Right.
Zoe, we had on health insurance and I was like, this is the cheapest baby we've ever had. Let's have a bunch more. But anyway, we had such shame about our financial failure. And what made it worse is that I felt like I couldn't talk to God about it because it was my own fault.
Oh, wow.
I did this to myself.
Oh,
and I
Lisa
think people
Jo.
Think that about weight, about destructive relationships, about any kind of failure. Like, I can't talk to God about this because it is my own fault. And so Pete and I
got myself into this.
I got to get myself out.
And then I'll go back to God.
And so it was so terrible because then you've got the double whammy of having failed and then feeling like you're to blame for that failure. Mm-hmm. And so you have to beat yourself up. And so for years, I lived with that for years. The shame, this oppressive shame, I felt like I could not talk to God about. And then I had this picture in my mind. I thought that God gave me. It was so powerful. So this is how I pictured Peter and I. I pictured that we had dug like a hole.
Yeah.
Not just like with our hands or with shovels, but we'd use like a big bulldozer thing and dug like a pit, like
an
a foundation of an apartment building.
Yeah, that deep.
Yeah. Then we played chicken on the side of the hole.
Uh-huh.
And then we fell into the hole.
Okay.
And then we had to get out of the hole by ourselves. And I felt like God said to me, really? So if your children did that on purpose, destructively, they dug a hole and then they played chicken and then they fell in the hole, your reaction is to stand on the side of the hole and lecture them and tell them, I can't help you till you're out of the hole.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? He said, no, good God fathers run and jump into the hole.
Yeah.
That is what they do.
Yeah.
And then they bring the soup and the flashlights and the tea. And actually, there was a news story a couple years ago about those kids in Asia. Do you remember that story?
Yeah,
of all the
Thailand,
boys in Thailand who were trapped underground. I can cry thinking about it. And those rescue workers who never gave up. At no point in that story did somebody accuse those kids of foolishness or that they didn't deserve to be rescued.
Yes.
Could you imagine?
I mean, if
that
the news
was a headline,
said, we're going to stop because they don't deserve to be rescued.
You're so stupid that you deserve to be in there.
Yeah.
No, the entire world came to a standstill as we watched with bated breath for those boys to be rescued. And when they were rescued, it was like our rescue.
Uh-huh.
Why would we think less of God?
Yeah.
And so now I'm of the mindset that I write about these stories of failure or, flabby muffin tops or how difficult it is to parent teenagers or to survive marriage in the middle, because I know so many people are in the same hole.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say, you're not in the hole alone. Mm-hmm. You have a God who runs. He doesn't just like walk slowly. Like he runs and dives into the hole and then says, get up on my shoulders. I'm going to help you out of this hole.
Mm-hmm.
And how powerful that is. And so the house story was really where I first encountered that, because we were in such bad debt that we couldn't afford to buy a house. And I thought it was our own fault.
Wow.
Because it was. And so I thought, there's no one I can talk to about this, least of all God.
Right. My friend JP Pakluta said, he posted this on Instagram where he said, when you get in trouble, you say, oh no, I can't tell dad. What we should say is, oh no, I got to go tell dad.
Right.
You know,
isn't that powerful?
Yeah. And I thought, man, that is so different.
So different. I know. I have that conversation with my own kids. I always want to tell them, no matter what happens, I need to be your first phone call.
Yeah.
Like, I promise you, I will not be mad. I will come and get you. I'll drive however far it is. Let me be your first phone call.
Uh-huh.
But why is that so hard to apply to ourselves?
Oh my gosh. I have no idea. Because
it's
because we feel like we're grown-ups and we can clean it up.
Right.
It's a mess we can clean up. Hey friends, just interrupting this conversation with Lisa Joe to tell you about this super cool event coming in September. Y'all know how big a fan I am of people and programs that challenge you to go deep and take a good long look at yourself and grow closer to God and the people you love. And that's why I have to tell you about Prodigal Love, held this September at one of my favorite places on the planet, Windshape Retreat. It's tucked away among 27,000 acres in Rome, Georgia. You can get some good boiled peanuts there. In a beautiful sequestered setting that reminds you God is there around every corner of your life, even the hard stuff. Prodigal Love is a 5-night personal growth intensive designed for individuals to explore the hidden parts of themselves and to work through what could be blocking their relationships and their potential. The program starts September 22nd, and it's offered through Windshape Marriage. And it's designed for anyone who wants to experience breakthrough in their life, whether you're single or divorced or married. The heart behind Prodigal Love is to help you get to a place where you can be more fully engaged in your relationship with God and others. And for my friends, for you guys, they are giving us $250 off for the upcoming Prodigal Love for each of you. So if you use the special code Annie, capital A-N-N-I-E, at checkout, you'll get $250 off. How cool is that? So to learn more about Prodigal Love, you can visit windshapemarriage.org/Annie. Again, that's Windshape, W-I-N-S-H-A-P-E, marriage.org/Annie. And don't forget to use the code capital A-N-N-I-E for $250 off. That's so cool. I hope you will check that out. Again, it's windshapemarriage.org/Annie. Now back to the show.
I think I'm really good at the apologetics of failure, like of not getting the thing or of disappointment. Like somehow faith is there to help us make sense of those things.
Yeah.
But I'm not good at the apologetics of happiness or joy. Like somehow I don't expect that is part of the narrative with God.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest thing. So when we ended up getting this house that we bought, it was almost hard for me to receive it because it felt like I'm just waiting for whatever bad thing is supposed to happen to even out the universe. Like, is that allowed? Am I allowed to have this good thing happen?
What's your Enneagram number?
I'm a 2.
A 2, okay.
Oh, yeah, Enneagram. Yes,
we don't have to do much. I just like to know as we're listening to how you process things, what one of the filters is that you use in your life.
Yes. And so I know part of what I struggle with 2s is a lot of the literature will talk about how 2s are shaped from, you know, well, I guess most of the numbers, but some kind of childhood wound.
Yeah.
And mine is like textbook, you know, my mom died. My dad was, you know, emotionally abusive for a long time. And the way I survived was by keeping him and everybody else happy.
Yeah. So, and lots of brothers.
And I just hate that about my, like, I hate that that's my story.
Yeah.
I feel resentful toward it. I feel like I'm a 2. I texted you this. I feel like I'm a 2 in recovery. Yeah. And then Annie was like, that's the whole point.
We're all our number in recovery. It's 100% right. But also Suzanne Stabile says the majority of your Enneagram nature is how you were born, much less nurture.
Hmm.
I mean, a lot of us connect with our childhood wound based on our number, but I also think you were probably just born a 2.
Well, what's helped me a lot recently, and I think writing this book has helped, and then conversation with wise friends, has been this, I think as humans, we tend to live on a straight line because we're trapped in time.
Right.
You know, there's the past, there's the present, and then there's the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, my past self was wounded in some way that's impacting my present self which will impact my future.
Yeah.
And in my future, I'm supposed to get as far away from who I was in my past as possible. I struggle with that because it makes me feel like somehow who I am now is still being defined by something back then. And I don't
yes.
like that. And I was talking to a really good friend of mine, was in town this weekend, and she's a military wife. They've been deployed for 3 years and they were home spending the weekend with us before they head to their next deployment. And I was like having a ranty fit about this, how unfair it is. And I don't want to be defined in this way. And I don't want to be a two because that means I have to accept these bad things about myself. And I don't want to. And she was so wise. She said to me, Lisa Jo, I don't think that's how God sees at all.
Mm.
God doesn't inhabit time the same way we do.
Right.
So whereas we might think of time as linear, God is more like an orb. So I had a friend send me a photograph recently, and maybe I'll send it to you and you can put it in the show notes. She bought like a glass ball that you can hold up and take photos through.
Uh-huh.
And so when you look at this orb, so she took a picture of a sunset. When you look at the sunset, there's the pink sky above, there's the earth below. But when you look in the orb, the whole thing is flipped upside down and it's round, it's spherical.
Oh.
As if all the colors and all that moment are captured in a way that our eye can't actually see.
Yeah.
I think about how God sees us. He doesn't see us linear. He sees us maybe more spherically. Because he sees my past and my present and my future as one moment.
Uh-huh.
So when he looked at past Lisa Jo, who was 14 and felt broken and unbeautiful, and her mom got sick and she felt like she didn't want to grow up to be a wife or a mom, but he also saw 44-year-old Lisa Jo, who feels deeply fulfilled as a wife and a mom and writes to encourage wives and moms.
Uh-huh.
And in that exact same moment saw who I'll be in 20 years.
Yes.
There's a wholeness that made me feel whole. Like God isn't creating these weird paradigms where I'm just my broken past and I need to try and be this healed future.
Or that this is a broken present that the future is going to look back on and be unhappy with.
And it was so redemptive
for me
to say to myself, no, he actually sees my wholeness. And I thought about this with Peter, you know, oh my gosh, it helped me so much.
Not your husband.
No,
one in the Bible.
That's right.
Yeah.
I know most people don't know my husband is called Peter, but the Peter in the Bible, when Jesus looks out the window just after Peter's betrayed him that third time.
Yes.
And he sees Peter.
And they make eye contact.
I've always felt so devastated for Peter. But you know, I've started to think about that differently. He isn't just seeing Peter in that moment. He is also seeing who Peter will be.
Yes.
He's seeing the martyr Peter. He's seeing the leader of the church. Like Jesus sees us in our wholeness, in our fullness. And I just... oh my gosh, it's just so wonderful to me. It helped me re-embrace my two-ness.
Yeah, okay, good. But also, Peter making eye contact with Jesus is heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking.
When I read that the first time, I was like, wait, what?
Right.
He made eye contact right after he did.
Yeah. Peter's like at the bottom of the hole.
Yes.
And like looking up, and Jesus is looking down.
Yeah.
But isn't it beautiful? Scripture talks about that look as a compassionate look.
Yeah.
There's no judgment in it. There's no wagging his finger. There's no, I told you so.
Right.
Isn't it great that there's no, I told you so?
It's also one of the reasons when we talk about genes, it's one of the reasons I have a really hard time with people, which everybody can celebrate how they want to celebrate.
Right.
Full stop.
Sure.
Also, I have a hard time when people hold up clothes that they used to be able to fit into and they drop them and there they are behind them. Because I'm like, didn't you love her?
Yes.
That version of you.
Yes.
Why are you doing that to her? That day she was doing the best she could.
Annie.
When you hold up her jeans and drop them away and you're half that size, you are, congratulations. You have done something for your own health.
Right.
Also, she was trying.
Right.
Or he was trying.
You know what that reminds me of? We were walking, Zoe and I. My daughter is 8, and she is the girliest girl you've ever met.
Yeah,
in your
I love
life.
Her. You
she's
when
the
you send
opposite
me pictures,
of me.
She's so
okay.
glittery. Oh my gosh. Oh, I'm always
she
like, that
is
my
just,
girl. I just love it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So she and I were walking, and we passed a tree, there's these giant 100-year-old oak trees where we live.
Yeah.
And there was a tree that had been cut down. And you know this about trees. You look at all the rings that mark the life of a tree.
Yeah.
And I think our clothes are like that. Our failures are like that. Like, they're not something we want to just drop and say,
right.
I'm not that. They are.
They
mark us.
Yes.
They mark who we are. They mark the story. And I think about how God has built that into his design for his creation.
It's
marked. Why is it as his humans that we want to part ways?
Yes.
We just want to be
we want
done.
To shame some of those rings of the tree. Like, stop shaming former versions of yourself.
Yes.
For alcohol, for education, for your body. Just stop. Like,
right. And it's why, I mean, it's why I write, I have an essay called The Scale Is Not the Boss of You.
Yes.
And I have another one called The Love Story of Turning 40. Because I was on a radio interview with a dude and I mentioned my age. His shock level read off the charts. Like, he was so shocked and like upset on my behalf that I had said my age out loud. He was like, wait, are you sure you want that in? Do you want us to take that out? And I thought, my goodness, since when did being ashamed of how old I am become part of being a woman? Are you kidding me?
You're like, what age did that switch over that now I need to be embarrassed?
Like, Zoe is delighted she turned 8.
Yes.
It's like, there's all this celebration in her life. Since where is that point in time we as women, like, I want to find it on the timeline where we mark the point where I'm now ashamed of my body. Mm-hmm. I'm ashamed of my years. I'm ashamed of my scars. Like, when do we switch over from celebration to shame? Like, where's that line? And then how do we push back on it? So this whole book is me attempting to say no.
Yes.
I reject that.
Like, I reject the middle being
that is
unattractive.
Not true.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, this is the part of my life where I can finally look back and I've actually got something to look back on. And the thing about the middle is, it's not a certain age. It's not a certain life.
Yeah, because it's actually different for everybody, right?
Because, yes, and I think, and it's not about having achieved certain things, like whether that's marriage or a certain job or kids. Like, it really is much more, the way I think of it is it's a crossing over from the first part of your life to the second part. And I think we all cross over at different ages.
Yeah.
But there's a sense spiritually of, God has brought me here to this place now, but now I ask myself, who am I going to be in this final stage of the race, this push toward the end? I guess I shouldn't say for everyone. For me, it's how it's felt.
Yeah.
What is the story of Lisa Jo? You know, I know the story up to now, but who am I? Who am I going to be? Where's he taking me? And I didn't want to feel like I'm just trying to get through to the end. I don't want to feel like I'm just trying to survive it. I don't want to feel like, well, they're just all these goals I didn't hit, but all these goals I still want to hit. I wanted to understand at a deeper level, what does it mean to live well in the second part of my life?
Right. Have you seen that thing of where Will Smith jumped out of an airplane when he turned 40 and said it was like his halftime show?
Yes.
And then he says, and then the third quarter is when you win the game.
Yeah.
He was like, so I'm going to go harder now.
Right.
And because than I've ever gone, because this is when I win the game.
Right.
And I just thought, I hope I live past 80, but I love the idea of going like, this is when we go.
Right.
This isn't when we slow down. You win the game. The first and the second quarter, you're just figuring out how to play against your opponent. The third and fourth quarter are when you're winning stuff.
And how do I give everything I've gained up to this point to the women coming up behind me? Mm. I think that's why I've loved what Beth Moore has been doing so much these days. Like, her whole goal is like, how do I equip my sisters coming up behind me? I will give you everything. Like, my failures, my doubts, my convictions, my experiences. And I think that more and more, how do we turn around to our sisters coming up behind and say, listen, sister, you're doing so great. You're running so hard. Let me tell you my age. Let me tell you my failures. Let me tell you my doubts. I mean, it's so funny. I have a section in the book called Why the Middle of Your Faith Matters, but really it should be called Why the Middle of Your Doubt Matters.
Yeah.
Because, so I'm curious about you and your experiences here in sort of entering the second half. Have you felt like, what have you felt is stronger, your faith or your doubt? Or do you feel like you can't really separate them out? Or
I don't know how to separate them.
So for me, it feels like a DNA, like a strand of helix.
Uh-huh.
But I wouldn't have said that in the first half of my life. I wouldn't have alluded to the doubt
much. Right.
Okay, so that's not just me?
No.
Okay.
And I think of it like when you're trying to make a dressing and it's oil and vinegar and you shake it, and it'll mix up, but it'll never totally become one thing and it'll separate and you need them about the equal amounts. Like, That's how you make a good dressing, is having oil and vinegar.
Okay, I'm so glad it's not just me. Yes, because that's how I've been surprised by my doubt in the second half of my life. You know, I've never doubted Jesus, right?
Sure.
I mean, but I have had a lot of questions that I haven't always had in the first half of my life. And I think the big difference in the second half has been feeling permission to ask them. And part of that has been interesting having kids, because kids are not afraid of asking questions. right? Mm-hmm. as we all know, because of the awkward things they will say in public.
Yes.
But they don't see asking questions as an act of doubt.
Right.
Like, so Zoe, my 8-year-old, she's so interesting. She went through a phase where she was deeply worried, and I write about this in the book. She was deeply worried that she came to the bathroom one morning. I'm getting ready for work. And she comes in and she's like, "Mom, I need to tell you something, but I don't know if I'm allowed to say it." I look at her and I'm like, "Really? What is it?" And she goes, what if God is something I just made up in my head and he's not really real?"
Oh, wow.
And I like put down the blow dryer and sat down next to her and was basically like, "Sister, you and me both."
Right?
Right? Because we
If you don't ask that question, you're missing out on getting a really good answer.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
And I think she was worried that even asking the question was a sign of such deep unbelief, which is how I would have felt in the first half of my life.
Yes.
I think that's what I mean by the second half, where doubt is something I'm not afraid of anymore. Mm-hmm. And I have really developed such an affinity with so-called Doubting Thomas because nobody in the New Testament called him Doubting Thomas.
No, Jesus
like, that's
didn't
a
call
heading
him that.
We slapped on that story.
Get going
Thank
on
you.
This, Lisa Jo.
Jesus called him his friend.
Yes.
And may I point out that Thomas expressing his doubt then is what drew him close to Jesus. Jesus is like, "Hey, you doubt? Put your hand right here and touch
Thomas
me."
And Thomas asked a very legitimate question.
Yes. It's so powerful.
Yes.
The church has labeled him Doubting Thomas. Jesus just called him his friend.
If you want to start talking about all the... prodigal son?
Yes.
That we labeled the lost son?
Yes.
Jesus starts the story by going, "There was a man who had two sons."
Thank you very much.
It was never about the lost son.
Right.
It was about two lost sons.
Right.
But our ancestors went through, and I think the whole Bible's true. I don't think any of the Bible is untrue. But the labels we put at the top of each chapter...
Tricky.
I'm just not quite as sold on
A little
on
tricky
those.
There.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so I have an essay called "For the Thomases."
Yes.
Because I have felt at this point in my life, whether you're 8 or 80, you're allowed to ask questions about what it is you believe.
Yes.
And the thing that has changed in me is that in the first half of my life, I would have felt like it's my job to convince you that you have to believe.
Yes.
Now I don't think that anymore.
Yeah.
Now I believe it's my job to tell you my story.
Yeah.
And see if in the telling of it, your story and what Jesus is teaching you will ring true for you.
Yeah.
Because it's Jesus' job. It's the Holy Spirit's job to convince you.
Uh-huh.
That is just not my business. And so the story with Zoe was so interesting because she sat down on my lap in the bathroom. I'm like wrapped in a towel. She's on my lap, you know, confessing her 8-year-old doubts to me, which resonated with my 44-year-old doubts. And I just said to her, "Zoe, honey, listen to me. Let's look at some of the stories in our family. Like, look at your opa," which is the Dutch word for grandpa. "Look at who he was."
Yeah.
He used to be, you've heard me talk about him, how angry he was, how scary he was when I was a kid. And look at who he is now. Are you scared of him? Do you trust him? Of course she trusts him. Of course she's not scared of him. Well, the only way I can explain that is because Jesus is real.
Yeah.
Or look at your mom, how I swore up and down I would never have children. I believe the direct quote was, "I would rather chew glass than have children."
Oh,
is
wow.
how strongly I felt about it.
Yeah.
And look at the three children I have
yes.
now. Like, how
yes.
do you explain that if it's not for a God who's real? And at the end of all of that, she still said to me, "Well, I don't know. I don't know if it's, I don't know if this thing is real or not." And I said, "That's okay. But here's the interesting thing." The next morning, I woke up and she had crawled into bed with me because she'd had a bad dream that night.
Mm.
And she was lying back to back with me and I rolled over and I gave her a hug and I asked her if she was doing okay after a bad dream. And she said, "Yeah, no, she was fine. It was good. She slept with mom and dad." And I said, "Great." And she goes, "How was your sleep, mom?" And I said, "Well, I actually, weirdly enough, had a bad dream myself. You know, I kind of had a scary dream." And Annie, without even thinking for a moment whether what she believed was something she could was true or not, without all those intellectual questions, my little 8-year-old's hand slipped around my back and she just started to pray. "Dear Jesus, please be with mom and don't let that bad dream come into her day because we believe that you keep us all safe and we love you, Jesus. Amen."
Yeah.
And I thought that right there, that's my faith and doubt dance.
Yeah, that's it.
Like asking questions 1 minute and the next minute praying with the assurance.
Right.
And conviction of
my
belief.
Gosh. Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
That is moving to me. Just the invitation to ask questions. You know, I can't remember who told me this, but Jewish parents, even maybe today, but for sure in history, when their kids get home from school, they ask, what was the best question you asked today? Not
really?
What did you learn? And so I've adopted that with my mini BFFs, with my friends' kids. And I always go, okay, did you ask any questions today that I think would be interesting?
Oh, I'm going to do that with my
kids. It's so fun because it gives them permission that the thing to celebrate isn't what you know, it's
right.
what you want to know.
Right.
And it is just way more fun. It right. leads to different conversations with all my friends' kids than I would have had a year ago because they go, okay, well, I mean, I asked one question about where the bathroom was, and then we get to have this like, well, why didn't you remember? And you know, like it just, or I asked a question about a frog because we saw a frog, and then we talk about frogs.
Yeah.
And it just leads to such a different experience when you ask the questions. And I think the same is true with God.
I know it is because look on the table in front of me, but it wasn't just because it's here on the table. In my notes, here's my note app.
Yes,
it says,
I'm ready.
Remember God, Annie's book. Because this is the book where you ask those questions.
Yeah.
Like, Annie, listen to me. I was reading this book. I read this book in the way you read fiction.
Mm,
I know I've told
you
this in person because I was like, oh my gosh, what will happen in the end? Yeah. How will God answer Annie's questions? Will he be there? Will he show up? I read it on the edge of my seat. I read it in the bathtub. I read it in bed. I couldn't put it down until I was finished. I was too scared to even text you in the middle of reading it because I didn't want you to spoil the ending for me. I just wanted to read it.
Yeah.
And I think that's why of all your books, it's my favorite by far because you do two things. You give permission to the reader to ask their own hard questions.
Yeah.
And then you tell the truth about what you found about God.
Thank you.
It is really, I mean, I cried. I've recommended this book to so many people because I think it's the adult version of my Zoe's question about God,
right?
Is he real or did I make him up in my head?
But isn't that the thing? I mean, it's what you do in your writing. It's what a lot of our friends do in our writing of going like, I think I'll be willing. I mean, it's that 2 Corinthians thing again.
Right.
I think I'll be willing to tell you the distress.
Yes.
In believing that somehow I will also get comforted.
Yes.
And I don't, and that this story, I mean, that's why you do this too. I've heard you say it, but when people say they want to write books, I go. We need your stuff. We cannot get enough stories.
Right.
We cannot have enough people telling us their experience with God and the planet and each other, like we, and themselves. We absolutely need that.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite questions to ask friends who I haven't seen in a long time is just this: how have you seen God for real in your life recently? Because I feel constantly like I'm on a treasure hunt trying to remind myself that God is real.
Yes.
And so I feel like when people are willing to tell me stories of how maybe they saw God in their everydayness, it's so encouraging
to
me.
Good. What's your answer?
It depends, right? So every day it's going to be a different thing.
Yeah, today, do you have an answer?
Sure. For in this season that I'm in right now, it's funny, I actually have sitting on the table next to me my N.T. Wright book.
Oh, I love N.T. Wright.
So I was really intimidated by him for a long time. I felt like he was above my pay grade. Like I couldn't read him. And then I stumbled on his podcast. Have you?
No.
It's called Ask N.T. Wright Anything. It is the greatest thing.
That's brilliant.
I was listening to it this morning as I was getting ready.
Oh, I can't wait.
And questions come in from all over the world.
They email them in.
Yeah, no holds barred. You can email, you can tweet, you can write. I mean, and they'll tell what country the question is coming from.
Yeah.
And then he answers the question. And so a question came into him, and this is why it's so beautiful for me, that said, it was from a housewife, essentially, right? A stay-home mom, and said, when you teach about God and who he is, I start to feel like my life isn't enough. It doesn't live up to.
Oh, wow.
You know, do I need to go and do something else? Like not just raise these kids, go write a book or speak on a platform or go on a missions trip or whatever. And I literally nearly pulled the car over because I was so worried about what his answer would be.
I'm
like, don't fail me now.
Right. Don't.
Please
don't.
You're my hero. Please don't let me down. And he spoke with such passion. The words that I would say to her too. No. Write what you're doing are the building blocks of God's kingdom. And where I've seen God recently through the reminder of N.T. Wright has been that when Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is now, he actually meant it. And I think as Christians, we often think of that as maybe esoteric and we're going to get to heaven one day where the kingdom of God is. But Jesus was actually saying, no, it's now on earth
here.
As it is in heaven,
which
means you're ambassadors for the kingdom, which means, Annie, that what we do right here in this podcast studio, sitting here talking, will actually build something there, that we will one day get to heaven and see something built out of this moment.
Yeah.
oh my gosh, it was so radical for me that I wanted to, like, I mean, I've been a believer since I was a little girl. I wanted to run into the street and just start telling random strangers, the kingdom of heaven is now.
The kingdom of heaven is now.
Yeah. Because I think so many of us are drowning in ordinary life.
Yes.
And we look at the viral videos and the YouTube moments and, you know, the Insta stars, and we want to be them.
Yeah.
And it's a lie from the enemy who doesn't want us to build the kingdom
where
we are. He wants us to abandon the bricks that are at our feet and walk off. And then part of the wall will never get built. Part of the house or the bridge or the park bench that's in the kingdom, you won't build.
Yeah.
And I, so there's this short story that J.R.R. Tolkien wrote. It's a very weird title. It's called Leaf by Niggle, N-I-G-G-L-E. It's a short story. Have you heard of this?
No.
Oh, I'm so happy right now.
Okay. I can't wait to read it, though.
It illustrates this idea of what we do now and how does it matter. So Niggle is this artist, and during his life on Earth, he wants to paint this leaf. He's working on this huge, giant canvas the size of his house. He's trying to paint this leaf, but he's constantly interrupted by people who are sick or people who need something from him or just life, and he can never quite complete the leaf, and he's so worried he won't complete it. And then he passes away before he's completed it, and when he arrives in heaven one day, he walks into this garden. I had choked up thinking about it, and right there, living and alive, is this leaf on this tree that he's been painting his whole life. And the gardener says to him, look, it's not finished. Come and work on it.
Oh, wow.
And the work he started on earth, he gets invited to complete in heaven. But it's real. It's alive.
Yes.
It's living. And so when I think about you and all the podcasts you put out, or even Instagram posts about your genes, I see in that something real, not just something, not just thoughts or words, but some bricks and mortar, something you're building here that eternally we'll see one day when we walk into the kingdom. And so I see God when I look at my ordinary life and I say, look at what happened in this moment, in this conversation I had with my daughter about her belly and about acorns or about my muffin top on the side of a stage and how I shared these hard moments for other women listening. And that one day, what we built here in this conversation will be a real living thing in the kingdom of God.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Man, that is a cool thought. I have never thought about that.
I had never. I'm telling you, this 44-year-old.
What made you pick up Tolkien?
My friend Christy Purifoy, who I do Out of the Ordinary podcast with, because our thought there is that the very best stories grow out of the soil of ordinary life.
Yes.
And she said, you should read Leaf by Niggle.
Yeah.
And then I read N.T. Wright, because I was listening to Ask N.T. Wright Anything, and in his book, Surprised by Hope, he quotes that story.
Oh my gosh, you're like, I was supposed to be reading this. I mean, that's how I see God in the everyday, is when those little moments happen where you go like, wait, that shouldn't have tied together like that.
It's amazing.
That has to be God.
I know. And then I sit down with you and you ask, where do you see God every day? And I say these days, I see him in my most ordinary moments, because I believe that's where the kingdom lives.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like we just had church. Well done. Lisa Jo, thank you for being here.
Oh, man.
I can't wait for people to get The Middle Matters. It comes out tomorrow.
I know. Oh, my gosh. So I can't believe it comes out tomorrow.
I know. It's available. So they can still get pre-order stuff if they go today.
So listen, you've got 24 hours to still go and get. If you go to themiddlemattersbook.com, we have this awesome bonus package, because it includes 8 secret podcast sessions with me behind the book. Take you behind the book and share a whole bunch of stuff, and $10
great.
Gift card to dayspring.com
and
a bunch of other freebies. Actually, the photographs that we talked about, the muffin top picture, there's a downloadable photograph album. Every essay in the book has the real photo to go with
I love it.
So if you get it between,
so you just go ahead and get that.
Yeah, I get it before the book is
I guess midnight.
Before it goes
on
midnight.
Monday.
Yeah.
On the 22nd.
Yeah. Crazy.
Okay. I love it. Well, thank you for writing it. I think it will matter to so many of us.
I hope so.
Thank you. Okay. The last question we always ask, because the show is called That Sounds Fun.
I know.
You are ready.
I am ready.
What sounds fun to you, Lisa Jo Baker?
Oh my gosh. So this is a totally non-spiritual, fun
Come
answer.
On.
My favorite author in the world, her name is Louise Penny. She's a fiction writer.
Yeah,
she's Canadian. You don't know her?
No, I want to.
Oh, only you and one other person probably.
I know. I can't wait.
She writes fiction that's centered around this character called Armand Gamache.
Yes.
You know what
I'm talking Freeman about. Emily Freeman loves these.
Because of me. I got her onto it.
You're the one, yes.
I hope that's true, Emily. I'm taking credit because I did peer pressure her. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the books are set in this fictional town of Three Pines up in Canada near Quebec. And you can take Louise Penny Tours.
You've got to go do it.
I want to go so badly. They take you to all the places because they're real places in the book.
Yes, yes.
You eat the real food because the books are all about food.
You can do that on
places.
Prince Edward Island with Anne of Green Gables.
I know.
I'm dying to do
it. I want to do it with Louise Penny.
Okay, that's a great answer.
It's like really what I aspire to do.
You should do it.
I'm going to. I think Christy Purifoy and I, because she also reads the books, it's one of the things we've told ourselves. It's a future gift we're going to give ourselves.
Good.
We're just going to nerd it up.
That's right.
Oh, big time.
That's not nerdy. I think that's very cool. Well done. I love you. Thank you for doing this.
I love you. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for how you build the kingdom. Seriously, one Instagram post, one podcast at a time. It's really deeply meaningful.
That's really kind. Oh, friends, don't you love her? She's just the best. Hey, make sure you grab a copy of The Middle Matters. I think it is a book that you will really, really enjoy reading, especially when we're gearing up for the fall, going into a bunch of new stuff. Let's read some of these books that'll help us be motivated and excited and appreciative of what we already have. So grab a copy of The Middle Matters. And also make sure you follow Lisa Jo all over the internet, everywhere you can find her, and tell her thanks for being on the show. I just can't tell you how grateful I am that my friends will make time to be on the show. It just means the world to me. So, hey, and if you get a chance to rate and review the show, that would mean a lot. It really helps the show kind of bump up in front of people who may not otherwise find us. So if you get a chance to do that, that would be awesome. If you need anything else from me, I'm embarrassingly easy to find. You know this. Annie F. Downs all over the internet. F as in friendship, because I do love me some Lisa Jo. That she is a dear, dear friend. So Annie F. Downs, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all the places you could need me, that is how you'll find me. And I think that's it for me today. Guys, go out and do something that sounds fun to you. I will do the same. And we'll see you back here on Thursday with my friend Chris Rice. Oh, y'all, you're going to love this conversation. We'll see you Thursday.